Hey there, sex fans, welcome back. Today is Wednesday, November 18th, 2009, and you are lucky enough to be listening to the podcast edition of Dr. Dick's Sex Advice with an Edge.
You spoiled, self-indulgent, willful, dirty-minded, liquor-ridden...
But I'm also your host, that savagely scintillating sexologist, Dr. Dick. Did you miss me last week? I know, it was beyond my control. Sorry to disappoint. But to make it up to you, I have the real deal for you today. That's right, we're going to get some mighty impressive sex education from one of the luminaries of gay porn. I'm talking big, big star here, people, and that's both literally and figuratively, if you catch my drift. I have the pleasure of welcoming a tireless activist, compelling educator, masterful rigger, and superb dom. He also directs, as well as performs, in his own line of signature, critically acclaimed fetish movies. He is the one and only Tony Buff.
But I don't believe you. I just don't believe you.
Well, he's sitting right here. And if you know anything about BDSM, rope bondage, or power play, you will probably know his name. And if you are a connoisseur of cutting-edge smut, well then, I know you are a huge fan of this amazing man just like me. Tony brings the same intensity and focus of his on-screen performances to this interview, and he adds his unique voice to the ever-growing chorus of prominent educators, practitioners, and advocates of unconventional sexual expressions and lifestyles that is this podcast series. Be sure to visit Tony on his kick-ass site, which is aptly named TonyBuff.com.
Oh, baby, aren't you something?
He sure is, but if you don't stop interrupting me, I'm never going to get to the interview. Today's podcast sponsor is Eden Fantasies. Listen up, you guys. EdenFantasies.com provides you a unique opportunity to both shop and educate yourself about the amazing array of adult products out there. Of course, they uphold a high standard of quality in the toys they carry, but they are even more focused on customer service and consumer education, which makes Eden Fantasy, to my mind, the very best place to shop on the net. I also want to turn your attention to Eden Fantasy's brilliant new e-magazine called Sex Is. You'll find tantalizing articles and informed opinions on sex, society, health, erotica, and humor. You'll even find ways to green your sex life. And just in case you don't get a big enough dose of Dr. Dick here on DrDickSexAdvice.com, you'll find that I have a weekly column at Sex Is, too. It's called Dr. Dick on Demand. Look for the Sex Is banner in the sidebar of my site.
You're so convoluted, that's what you are. You talk like you were writing one of your stupid papers.
Oh, snap. Okay, on with the show. Tony Buff, welcome, and thank you for dropping by DrDickSexAdvice.com. I'm so delighted that we've finally been able to make this time to be together. I truly appreciate your perseverance. Would you like to say hello to the nice people?
Hello, nice people. And big shout-outs to my boys and the brothers and sisters in my leather family, the Dragon Clan, too.
Cool beans. And since this is the sex education podcast series, you know for certain that there's going to be a load of big fat perverts out there too. Would you like to say hello to them?
Absolutely. Those would be my peeps. I've had the pleasure of traveling all over North America the past couple of years, meeting some of the most amazing kinksters, building communities from Tampa to Palm Springs, New York to San Francisco, Toronto to Vancouver. And so many points in between. I've met so many wonderful individuals working in their local communities to create positive change. It's hard not to believe we're witnessing a kind of fetish SM renaissance. I just hope I'm contributing a little to those efforts.
Right. And which explains the reason why it's taken us so long to make this time to be together. Your schedule, oh my God, not only do you need a social secretary, but the rigors of your career would leave a lesser man exhausted, an exhausted wreck. How do you do it? You've got to have a body double, right?
I know, right? It's been a crazy year. Looking back, I sometimes wonder how I packed so much in.
Really?
But I've got an incredible support network. And while I don't have a body double, I will have a replica of my cock from Doc Johnson.
That's so
part
true.
Of the Titan Tools line available next year.
That
although I'm
so
not
true.
Sure that's going to help at all.
Well, you just never know. I know. I'm sure that you're going to have one sent over to Dr. Dick for the Dr. Dick review crew to review, so that we can promote it on our site as well. So, listen, I'd like to start our interview with the same question that I've been asking all of my Seattle guests: Elena Gabosh and Max and Monk and Lady Lydia and Sylvia O'Stafermore and Cunning Minx among them. Is the Pacific Northwest, in general, and Seattle in particular, a hotbed of perversion, or is this just wishful thinking on my part?
You know, that's a great question, and you know, I know every one of those names that you've listed off, and I think most definitely the Pacific Northwest is a hotbed and on the forefront of fetish and SM. I've got to tell you, as much as I've traveled, it really makes me appreciate what we have in the Pacific Northwest. There's something about our community that is really special. There's a lot of blurring of the regular lines of distinction that you find in so many communities.
Oh, it's true.
For example, I mean, I'm real good friends with Twisted Monk and uh-huh. Mistress Matisse and the differences between like the men's community, the women's community, and the swingers community and the poly community, those all kind of blur and disappear here in the Pacific Northwest in a lot of ways, which is very distinctive to our region.
Yeah, and it's different, like in bigger cosmopolitan areas like San Francisco or New York, where, you know, the community is fractured so much. So I appreciate that, too. And I think the Northwest is really great along those lines. Besides, the weather is perfect for leather, as long as you waterproof it.
Yeah.
So let's start by talking about you, the real you, and the porn star. And I suspect that there is a distinction between the two. Is that not correct?
Not really. It's
no
pretty
kidding.
Easy to talk about me instead of the porn star, because the real me and what I like to call the humble performer are really the same person. I've been publicly active in the leather SM scene for quite some time, and
uh-huh.
I see much of my work in the adult film industry as an extension of that activism. So I may play a role in a feature like a lumberjack, a park ranger, corrections officer, criminal mastermind, or EMT, but
uh-huh.
the person on set is the same one that you'd meet on the street or in your city's local leather Levi bar. I'm just your average bisexual, polyamorous, kinky, sadomasochist, switch, queer performer.
You don't say.
That's a mouthful.
I guess so. Could you give us a little bio? Where did you come from? Are you a Seattle native? I don't even know that.
No. I was born in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, but
no
grew
kidding.
Up in Southern California, the Inglewood Compton area.
Uh-huh.
I joined the Marine Corps when I was 17 and studied philosophy and political science at Cal State Long Beach.
Whoa.
I'm 39 now, and I've lived in Seattle for going on 19 years.
Holy cow. And everybody's going to want to know how you got your start in the porn biz. And the reason I ask that, besides the interest that our audience might have, is that I recall when I first met you, I was surprised to discover that you were not already making porn. And when I asked you, you said, "Me? In porn? Never."
Yeah, I know. Can you believe? I never would have gotten into the industry if it weren't for my involvement in the SM scene.
Uh-huh.
I was at a run called Inferno, sponsored by the Chicago Hellfire Club, about 3 years ago when I met my boy Derek Da Silva. I didn't know it at the time, but he'd been working in the industry for a number of years doing SM and wrestling films.
Hmm.
After a visit to Seattle, he asked if I'd be interested in topping him for a video and suggested it would be a great way for us to see each other again. Well, I said I'd think about it. A few days after that conversation, Derek called to tell me that Daddy Zeus was coming out of retirement to direct a trilogy.
Huh.
And he had been cast in the film, Derek, and they were looking for a top. So he put me in touch with DZ, and I sent down some photos, and before I knew it, I was heading to Palm Springs to shoot my first adult feature.
Huh. Right. Well, I'm sure the photos seal the deal, as it were, right? Because you've got porn charms, don't you know?
Well, thank you.
Which again explains why Doc Johnson is going out of his way to mold your penis for a dildo.
Yeah, that kind of squigs me out still.
Well, you're up there with, you know, I mean, you're in the pantheon. You are one of the stars. Nowadays.
I never would have expected it.
You know, I think it's absolutely amazing, too. I think the people that I know in the industry who are really remarkable personalities like yourself are remarkable personalities in their own right. You know, they don't become, as you suggested about your own self, they don't become the porn star. They are themselves, and it comes across in the work, and I think it's absolutely amazing. So you've been blessed along those lines.
Thank you. I really don't have a porn persona. I mean, what you see is what you get. I mean, the name I use for screen is really just my nickname.
Yeah,
so
right. So I'm gathering that you like your work, yes?
I really enjoy the work, yes, especially the collaborative nature of much of my work with Titan.
Uh-huh.
What started out as a means of getting together more often with my boy has turned into something of a passion. Capturing uh-huh. this thing of ours, BDSM, on screen, creating features like Fear and Folsom Prison, these are not your standard sex films. They capture an aspect of male sexuality that many would rather condemn, censor, and deny. They document the kind of radical sexuality that is at the heart of our queer liberation. They spark our sexual imaginations, they confront social mores, and present new constructs for which we can frame our lives. They engage us in ways that not only get us off physically, but mentally and emotionally as well. As such, I think they become more like a truly artistic medium.
Well, and besides the fact, I mean, the kind of stuff that you're doing in your rough line, which I hope to get to in a minute, is authentic. I mean, this is not play acting. These are not performers acting, you know, in like BDS, fake BDSM scenes, but you guys are, you know, the real deal. And
that's
you're,
the idea.
Right. And that makes it all the difference in the world, it seems to me, because I'm real aficionados of this scene would automatically know by just, you know, in the first 10, 15 seconds, you know, if the depiction is authentic or not.
Absolutely.
So, what is the hardest part, no pun intended, to of being a porn star?
It falls in line with that authenticity that you were talking about. I mean, having to establish an instant rapport with scene partners that maybe
right.
you've met for the first time on set that day is probably the hardest part of
yeah.
the work. The shoots themselves can be extremely grueling. Long, fatiguing days, environmental extremes, demanding scenes. But I've got a Marine Corps work ethic, so give me a mission and I'll do my best to accomplish it. What I can't really control is whether or not the chemistry is going to exist between me and my scene partners.
Right.
This is exceptionally important when there's any kind of fetish or SM play incorporated into the scene.
Mm-hmm.
There's a necessary level of trust and connection required for those scenes, and if the chemistry doesn't exist, you're fucked.
Right.
Luckily, many of my scenes include performers I've known fairly well or connect with almost immediately. But other times, it's more of a challenge to find the means to make those connections.
Yeah. Many people are really under the misconception, because I hear this a lot myself when, you know, people talk about the work that I did with my production company, Daddy-O Productions. And they said, you know, oh, I would love to be on a porn set. You know, oh, it must be really great, you know, stiff dicks and, you know, orgiastic kind of. I said, oh, boy, you have no idea. It's a lot it's a lot of, you know, hurry
okay,
up
Okay, hold
and
that
wait.
Position right there. Open up to the camera. Can you pop your foot up on that tree? Well, I know you're not supposed to bend that way, but we really need to get this camera angle.
Oh, I know. God, it's so awful. And, you know, and so
and it's freezing cold sometimes when you're doing an outdoor shoot. I mean, it's like, fuck.
I know. Oh, my God.
It's work. It's work, but it's enjoyable work nonetheless.
Yeah.
I mean, I mean, shit, some of my sex partners, even outside of the boys that I know and have brought in, especially for the rough shoot, but I look at, like, Breakers. I got to perform with Francois Sagat, one of the biggest names in the industry, and also one of the most amazing individuals I've ever met. He's intelligent, bright, sweet, beautiful, inside and out. I can't sing his praise enough.
Right. Yeah. I think it's absolutely stunning. But I mean, the misconceptions that people have about, you know, pornography, you know, that it's an easy thing, because people approach me all the time and said, you know, I'd really like to work in one of your films, and, you know, I've got a really big dick and I have a nice body, and I go, well, that's a nice start. But, you know, the mindset behind it all is, I mean, because it is sex on demand, and it's not like having sex, you know, with, you know, a revered partner in the confines of your own home, but it's something much more grueling, as you suggest, you know, 8-hour days and, you know, holding positions where, you know, other people would fail.
True.
I know that a lot of guys in porn supplement their income by dancing or escorting, but I gather that you have taken a different path than that. You teach and lead workshops, right?
That's right. I do demos and teach BDSM skills through workshops, presentations, and performances around the U.S. and Canada. It's very rewarding.
Uh-huh. Could you give us an idea of what some of the classes and demos might involve?
Well, my boy Derek and I have taught needle play workshops at events like Claw, presented Shibari rope bondage classes at SM runs like Thunder in the Mountains and Shibari Con. We've performed at events like the IML 30 Victory Party at the House of Blues in Chicago. It's given Derek and me an opportunity to connect with like-minded individuals in the scene and spread our philosophy and approach to play. Safer sex and risk mitigation in scene are real passions of ours.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned needle play. Could you elaborate on that? And also Shibari. Some of our audience may not be familiar with those words necessarily.
Absolutely. Needle play or play piercing is a type of BDSM scene where you use hypodermic needles, for example, to do temporary piercings of the skin or body parts. It's real important, of course, that you do this responsibly, that you use clean and sterile technique to avoid bloodborne pathogens and things like that. But it's it's a wonderfully delicate scene in that you can really control as a top the endorphins and adrenaline response in your body, in your bottom's body, to really create an intense experience and scene for them. It can be really incredible.
Hmm. And the Shibari?
Oh, and Shibari, Shibari is an Eastern form of rope bondage. It has its fundamental roots in Hojo Jiu-Jitsu, which was a martial arts form out of Japan of how to tie up prisoners and things like that. Now, it's been very eroticized in its Shibari form, mm-hmm. but I found a real passion. I've always had a real passion for rope, and when I saw the simple elegance and speed that Shibari offers to a rope bondage scene, I just absolutely fell in love with it. And luckily, I have had some incredible mentors, especially living here in the Pacific Northwest. Mm-hmm. Max, who does bondagelessons.com, and Twisted Monk is here, who has is a local artisan that makes conditioned hemp. I mean, and I've learned a lot from these individuals. So,
own rigging, right?
Oh, I absolutely do my own rigging.
Yeah, that's interesting, because it would seem to me that's such a big part of it. I mean, how could one walk into a scene that has been rigged by someone else? I mean, when I talk to Monk, for example, I mean, that, you know, the whole doing of it. Max said the same thing. You know, it's the art of the rig that makes the scene.
Absolutely, absolutely. And if you're looking at it from a performance aspect on screen, someone else coming in and doing the rigging is part of a production that is more about the look and the aesthetic and more of a photo or video shoot, right, than an actual capturing of the play involved. For me, Shibari and rope bondage is a part of a lot of the scenes that I create in my personal life and a lot of the scenes that I do on screen as well. I use rope bondage and shibari in particular as a way to bookend my scenes. When I first get to my bottom and I run the rope around them, it connects me with them physically and emotionally. I put them in the bondage. The bondage then serves as a support structure or a foundation for whatever we happen to be doing in the middle of the scene, whether it be electricity play or just sex or a beating scene or any other kind of intense stimulation that might happen within the context of this scene. And then when that's all over and we've done the ramp up and the crescendo and we're coming down, and then at the end I'm untying my bottom and undoing the rigging and reconnecting with them again. Wow. It's part of the total experience.
That's so incredibly powerful. I mean, just hearing you talk about it, let alone watching the scenes, I mean, it's mesmerizing. And Chris Yoso said the same thing. I mean, did you rig the fisting scene that you guys did together?
Absolutely.
No kidding. Wow, good for you. Holy cow.
Yeah, no, it's a lot of fun. And again, I have to give credit where credit is due. Twisted Monk has taught me a tremendous amount of rope work. I've learned so much from Max, Mark Wu from out of Texas, I think is now in Portland, actually, another move to the great Pacific Northwest.
Really? How amazing. I understand that...
Oh, and Midori. Oh, I have to say Midori, too.
Yes,
oh, my
right,
goodness.
Right, right.
How could I
Absolutely.
Forget Midori? I love Midori.
Your work with Titan started out primarily as a performer, right? And then you parlayed that into developing your own line, which we call the Rough Line. Is that correct? Did I have that right?
That's correct. Yeah, I started off as an exclusive performer. They signed me after the shoot for Chainsaw.
Uh-huh.
And this came, that production was right on the heels of my performance in Fear. And I did a number of movies through that first year. And when my original contract with Titan came to a close, we started talking about what the future might hold. My work with Titan had been extremely rewarding on a multitude of levels. Paramount among these were the collaborative nature of our work together, the fact that I became a major contributor to the productions of which I was a part of helped fuel my creative desires.
Mm-hmm.
Working as an exclusive with one of the most recognized and among the best of the studios in the business has helped me get my message of safer sex and risk mitigation and SM scenes to a much broader audience than I had ever expected.
Right.
It has also been an honor to be associated with a studio that shares my values and the values of my community of family and friends. So when Brian Mills asked what I wanted to do next, I told him I wanted to direct. My work on Folsom Prison solidified my passion and my desire to capture this thing of ours on screen.
Mm-hmm.
So shortly after pitching my vision for a series of projects to him, Keith Webb and Bruce Kamm suggested I team up with Paul Wilde and make it happen as a Tony Buff branded line for Titan. Wow. How could I resist, right? So over the course
exactly.
of the last year, I've been performing in and co-directing the new Rough Line of rack-inspired documentary-style fetish SM features for Titan, and we'll be continuing to do that through the next year.
Hmm.
Of course, I'll also be continuing my activism and advocacy work within the leather community through my writing, educational work, and interviews like this.
Great. So you're directing and starring in the movies for the Rough Line, yes?
Yes. I'm transitioning more behind the camera as we get the foundation of the line established. Uh-huh. But I can't help but get out in front of the camera from time to time, too.
Which we're enormously grateful for. Are there scripts and stuff like that that you also write? I mean, you're beginning to sound like the Barbara Streisand of pornography, if you ask me. I knew that would get you.
Well, there are not scripts for the rough line. The rough line is very much about bringing in real players and having them pull together their scenes and then documenting it with the camera in as unobtrusive a manner as possible, so that we actually capture the real deal. However,
so you're performing, and the cameras are, or you're having sex, or you're doing your thing, and the cameras are trying to capture that, as opposed to a feature film, which you are performing for the camera, and then you're repositioned, and you know the cameras begin again. It's a completely different take on producing pornography, would you not say?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. It's a huge difference, and I'm still doing work on the feature line as well, and I love that. I mean, that's where you can create story and that kind of thing. And for example, Folsom Prison, I've got screenwriting credit along with Diesel Washington and Brian Mills for that particular feature. So it was about creating environment, creating story, and putting framework around the action itself.
Wow.
Which is really rewarding as well.
It sure is, absolutely. I mean, I did that a fair amount of that for my own production company, and it's gratifying to see that all come together, and then how it's knit together in the editing process, post production it's fascinating. It's absolutely fascinating.
I cannot sing the praises of the editing department at Titan, especially when it comes to the rough line, because we are shooting it documentary style. Right. The work that they do in the editing suite is absolutely critical to the process. I love them.
Well, it either makes or breaks, the movie. It's simple as all that. I mean, you could work your heart out and perform your heart out, and if there's bad camera work, or worse, if there's bad editing, it's completely done, for sure.
Absolutely.
So I got to ask you, what do you think of the state of gay porn these days? The reason I ask is that, for the most part, I'm really disappointed. So much of it is unimaginative, cookie-cutter, mind-numbing dreck. Would you like me to tell you how I really feel?
I have to agree with you on that. As far as the state of gay porn today, though, I think it can be characterized by three words: change, challenge, and opportunity. The audience, markets, and technology relating to adult entertainment are all changing. I think technology is really at the heart of this change. Anyone with a digital camera and some lighting can become a pornographer.
Right.
Anyone with an internet connection can find what they need to get off.
Right.
The audience, as a result, has broadened, become more sophisticated, and I might add, a little more adventurous. It's easy to explore those nasty little fantasies when you're sitting in the dark and all you have to do is type a request or point and click. The gay adult entertainment industry faces some real challenges, however. The very changes brought about by these technological advances create very real challenges for traditional producers and studios.
Right.
In addition to competing with amateur content, studios must combat the ease of a pirate duplication and distribution. Producing content of superior quality in comparison to most of the amateur content available online is an easy task for studios with HD cameras, professional lighting rigs, and skilled talent. The distribution of pirated content seriously diminishes the value of a studio's catalog, and battling this phenomena becomes a primary challenge for those who strive to provide creative content with both production value and artistic merit.
And,
additionally, the rise of video on demand and the culture of logging on and getting off in 3.5 minutes has begun to challenge the traditional approach of full feature studio productions.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. That was the thing that concerned me most, or I found so fascinating. When I started Daddy-O in 2001, by the time we basically stopped filming, 5 or 6 years later, the medium of choice went from DVD to internet, download to own, and streaming, which, kind of pulled the rug out from under the whole DVD market. And so bringing content to people is as challenging now as ever, it seems to me.
Of course, of course. But with these challenges come those opportunities. That
yes.
third thing that I mentioned, the challenge of competing with the amateur content available online provides traditional producers and studios with the opportunity to up their game. Rather than remain stagnant and fall off into obscurity, they can tap into a new creativity. They can utilize the very technology that is at the heart of this challenge to determine what is driving the current market and new technologies to improve the quality of the product they produce. They can empower the talents they have available in terms of on-screen talent, production crews, post-production editing and marketing to create content far superior to anything any amateur can produce or distribute.
That's so true. Absolutely.
Moreover, the traditional players within the industry can take a lesson from our history in confronting the challenge created by VOD, a video on demand.
Mm-hmm.
Gone soon will be the days of full-length feature DVDs, but we can look back to the early days of 8mm and 16mm loops to find a new future in the market of streaming media. I'm a firm believer that the standalone vignettes of like 7 to 21 minutes of streaming contextual hardcore erotica could become our next, our generation's new loops. Serialize mm-hmm. these vignettes, and you may just have a new business model for the adult industry.
I totally agree, but in that vein, I'd like to turn our attention to a very contentious issue, particularly in the gay community in general, but in the porn industry as well, and that is discussing the issue of barebacking. I know you have very strong thoughts about this, and so I'd really invite you to clue us into your thoughts on this.
Well, in a simple statement, I find it quite detestable. It's a rather lucrative segment of the industry that
I'll
is perpetuated, in my opinion, by greed, ignorance, and the exploitation of insecurity and a distorted view of personal and social responsibility. The effect that it has had on the industry is insignificant compared to the repercussions it has had on the broader community in terms of HIV seroconversion,
right.
transmission of Hep C and other STDs, and the eroticization of high-risk behavior. The studios that produce and promote barebacking are marketing high-risk behaviors that would endanger my Paws brothers with other serious infections, and their marketing suggests to everybody that unsafe behavior is cool.
Yeah,
this message is especially
and edgy, I might add, and which ties
yeah.
into the whole thing that you know of you know the BDSM leather scene is also supposed to be edgy and cool, and so you bring those two things together, and that's a scary thing, it seems to me.
Oh, absolutely. And the message is especially dangerous to men who have just come out,
right.
regardless of what their age,
right.
since this is a time when guys are both emotionally vulnerable and very impressionable.
Right.
I know this one kid who seroconverted when he was 19 after coming out just 2 years earlier. He says one particular bareback performer was his hero and a major
right.
influence on his behavior when he first came out. Of course, this is a message that becomes more and more pervasive, and it further pressures fellow performers and other sex workers into activities they may not be comfortable with risk-wise out of fear of lost income.
Right. And that's a big part of it, you know. That's a big part. You know, if you want to work, then this is what we have to offer. And, you know, since there is no consensus in the industry about behavior and responsibility and sex positiveness, I just think, you know, it often sinks to the lowest common denominator, and we're all the poorer for it, if you ask me.
Unfortunately. Luckily, there are studios like Titan, the one that I'm working with, that takes a very responsible position
yes.
on this issue.
And consistently so. They are one of the few that have, you know, consistently and doggedly stood against this, and I'm my hat is off to them.
Absolutely, and my respects and congratulations to Shishi LaRue for taking
exactly.
the stance that she does, and my friend Steve Cruz, who does the How I Roll campaign.
Exactly.
There are people that are taking a stand on these issues and being advocates for responsibility.
Speaking of stands, one that I know has pretty much shaken the entire industry is the stand that the Mr. International Leather program has decided to exclude barebacking products from their event.
Yeah, a few months ago, International Mr. Leather founder and current president Chuck Renslow sent a message to IML leather market vendors and the members of the leather community. That letter announced a policy adopted by the executive committee of IML regarding the promotion or advocacy of barebacking, the practice of unprotected anal sex among men who have sex with men. This new policy specifically disallows entities that distribute and sell merchandise tending to promote or advocate barebacking from participation in the IML vendor market. Personally, I myself have questioned the level of acceptance bareback studios enjoy at leather community events. I've been troubled by the growing perception that barebacking, especially the marketing of unsafe sex with multiple anonymous partners, is somehow an acceptable practice among responsible fetish SM players. Given our tribe's long tradition of taking care of each other and teaching each other how to play more safely, I'm amazed our response has not been stronger or come more quickly.
Yeah, I am too. It's amazing. But, you know, now that it's here, is there much blowback from that? I mean, are people thinking, you know, well, you are trying to manipulate me into doing something that I think it's my right to do?
Well, first and foremost, let me state unequivocally that every individual has the right to formulate his or her own risk profile, i.e. the level of risk he or she is willing to accept in any given situation, scene, or with a particular partner.
Right.
I also hope that we all remember to respect each other regardless of our stance on this particular issue, the
right.
decisions made in the past, or current health status. However, the fact is HIV and AIDS are still serious issues. While HIV is more manageable now than it has been in the past, there are still serious repercussions for those living with the disease. And HIV isn't the only STD out there. Hep C is a growing problem among fetish SM players.
Yes.
Taking responsibility may not be a popular position, but it's the right thing to do, not just for yourself, but the people that you care about and share your life with.
Right, right. And with that, sir, I must acknowledge that our time together has come to a close. I know. You better be available next week because that's all I can say is I'm just getting started with you. I still want to do stuff about polyamory and power play and your life with your boys and your tribe and whatnot. So can I invite you back next week?
Sounds like a date, Doc.
Oh, I'm going to write that up on my blog. I'm dating Tony Buff, and so there. But before we go, can I ask you to give us your website address and walk us around a bit?
Absolutely. The website is tonybuff.com. And when you go to the site and click in through the age restriction, you'll find my personal blog. The blog covers many things from promotional announcements of where I'm going to be and what I'm going to be doing in the future. I also try to write some personal entries about what's going on with the film career, the art film career, sometimes giving a peek behind the scenes of the rough line and the feature line that we're doing. I also write some pointed essays and criticisms. For example, a previous entry entitled A More Nuanced Position is in response to IML's decision to ban the barebacking studios and promotion from the vendor market and my take on the particular issue. You'll also find galleries of pictures, both from the films that I've done, also galleries of pictures of some of my rigging and some of the events that I've attended. Try to keep that flowing with some good imagery. You'll find a list of all the films that I've done with trailers and galleries and press and the like. You'll also find a list of all the upcoming events that I'll be attending moving forward. And of course, if you find something on the blog that you want to comment to, I read all of the comments that are posted to the blog and try to respond to as many as I can.
You're a prince, sir.
Well, thank you. Thank you. The other thing that I'll point out is on the sidebar, once you get past my Twitter feed, you'll see a section on giving back, and it talks about the classes that Derek and I do around the country. There's a link to the BDSM Safer Kinky Sex booklet from the AIDS Committee of Toronto. That's a great guide for individuals looking at fetish play and what the safety issues and concerns are there. So I invite you to check that out, as well as the other resources that I have listed there.
Well, we will certainly be busy during the next week. And until next week, we will be seeing you in cyberspace.
Outstanding.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Pretty amazing show, huh? Well, that's it for today, sex fans. Tune in next week for part two of my discussion with Tony Buff, and more sex advice with an edge with your host, me, Dr. Dick.
I'm loud, and I'm vulgar, and I wear the pants in the house because somebody's got to.
And they look really nice on you, too. Again, this week's podcast sponsor is EdenFantasies.com, the one-stop place to shop for quality adult toys, fetish kits, and sexy lingerie. But wait, that's not all. Eden Fantasies has developed an online community of product reviewers, fantasy contributors, and renowned sexperts who will make your online shopping experience a joy. One thing you won't want to miss is their community blog, EdenCafe.com. It's so fun and sexy, irreverent and cheeky, but it's also exceptionally informative. Look for the Eden Fantasies banner right there on the sidebar of DrDickSexAdvice.com. You can link to the brilliant Eden Cafe from there. And look for all of Dr. Dick's podcasts on iTunes. You'll find me in the podcast section under health subcategory sexuality, or just search for Dr. Dick's Sex Advice. Don't forget to subscribe and leave a comment when you do. Until next week, remember, sex is good, and good sex? Well, that's even better. Over and out.